Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU.
This week, Easy Life agree to change their name for an easy life. Welcome to Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. I'm Andy Malt. With me is Chris Cook. Hello, Chris.
Hello there.
As ever, we're going to take a look back at some of the biggest and most interesting music industry news stories of the last week. Although before we get into the last week, because we've been off for a couple of weeks again, but had we not both been ill, we were wondering if we would have to record basically the same podcast that we recorded a year ago and possibly the year before that, and maybe even the year before that, where we discussed how the Conservative Party leader, whoever that was that week, had annoyed the music industry by walking on stage to a song at the Tory Party conference, which they had not properly licensed, but in a change from the norm, because the Conservatives were the party of change. Certainly when it comes to music use in a very specific setting, they did not use some big pop song and annoy everyone this year. I mean, they annoyed everyone with it, pretty much everything else, but the music industry was fine.
Yes, we didn't get to rewrite that story, which, as you say, we've written a number of times in recent years. We didn't get to have the same old edition of Setlist where we go through once again the ins and outs of politicians making use of known songs by known artists at their political events. From a UK perspective, the thing we've talked about in recent years is that while the music industry offers a blanket license through the collective licensing system, which is used by venues and the organisers of events, including conferences, there are a handful of exclusions in that license, which is administered by PPL PRS. And one of the exclusions is any music used alongside a keynote speech at a political conference. But despite that fact that that exclusion is in the license, and therefore to legally make use of music around a keynote speech at a political conference, the organisers of the conference, the political party, need to go and negotiate bespoke deals with the labels and publishers that control the music they want to use. That has not happened in recent years. I mean, to be fair, we don't know whether or not the other political parties have ever licensed any of the music they've used for keynote speeches. But generally speaking, it is when Conservative Party leaders and prime ministers use pop songs to walk onto stage that this becomes a big scandal, because generally speaking, the artists who have made that music don't agree with the politics of that politician and get offended that their music has been used. And then we here at Setlist get into the copyright part of that conversation. So I did actually post on social media the day before Prime Minister Rishi Sunak was due on stage. I wonder if this year will be the year where they'll actually license some music. I mean, actually, we should say, we don't know whether or not they did license the music. The point is, they just use what we're pretty sure is some production music, and maybe they got a license for that, or maybe they didn't. But instead of walking on stage to a pop song, Rishi Sunak and his team used a piece of pretty generic and dull and easy to forget, and yet at the same time, strangely sinister production music, which they may or may not have licensed. So well done to the music team, whoever organized the music for that conference, because not only did you avoid pissing off a pop star this year, and possibly you avoided infringing copyright this year, which is always a good thing to do as the party of government, I also think that the pick of the music was quite good, given the man who was walking on stage to waffle. So, we don't get to have that conversation this year, but that's a good thing. It's a good thing that the party of government in the United Kingdom, at least for this year, on not infringing the rights of artists and songwriters with the keynote speeches at their party political conferences.
So everyone's a winner, except us, because we quite like talking about that. And I suppose everyone else, because of all of the rest of the stuff that happened at the Conservative Party conference. Toploader played.
They did. Although, to be fair, they did play a UK music event. And as I understand it, they also played the UK music event at the Labour conference. I don't know why I'm defending Toploader, because they did get a lot of stick for that on social media.
Yeah, to be fair, they weren't playing Rishi Sunak onto the stage. But maybe that's what he wanted, and that's why he had to hastily get some production music.
Maybe so. Although what we're basically trying to say here is, from a music licensing perspective, if only from a music licensing perspective, there was no controversy at the recent Conservative Party conference in the UK. So there's nothing there for us to talk about, which means we're going to talk about some other stuff. Actually, quite interesting stories this week. So I'm glad we don't have to talk about any of that nonsense.
Yeah, later on, we'll be discussing Coldplay's ongoing legal battle with their former manager, Dave Holmes. But first, British band Easy Life have said that they will change their name following legal action from Easy Group, which owns the EasyJet airline, and, more importantly, the trademark in the name Easy Life. The band revealed in a social media post earlier this month that Easy Group was attempting to force them to change their name. Then, in a bullish response, Easy Group said that it has a long-established record of legally stopping thieves from using our brands.
Now, Easy Life, the band, have been going for quite a few years now. They launched back in 2017. They've released two albums, both of which went to number two in the UK album chart. So you might be thinking, well, hang on a second, given this band have been around for a while now and the Easy Group has been in existence for a long time. Obviously, EasyJet has been operating for a long time. Why is it that this dispute over the name Easy Life has come to a head right now? Well, as you mentioned, the Easy Group does own the trademark Easy Life. I mean, the Easy Group owns lots and lots of trademarks that use the word easy, hence Easy Group. But one of them is Easy Life. So therefore, on one level, Easy Group's core claim was a relatively straightforward trademark claim, which is, hang on a second, you're trading as a band as Easy Life. We own the trademark Easy Life. Now, we should add, of course, when it comes to trademark, one of the rules of trademark is that when you register a mark with a trademark registry, so this is a UK case, so if the UK trademark registry, you only actually get exclusive rights to a name within certain sectors or categories. And when you apply, you have to say which categories you want protection in. But the category that Easy Group owns the Easy Life trademark in is a very wide-ranging category with a huge long list of products and services that are covered by the mark. And there are a couple in there that are basically music-related. I mean, it is CDs and DVDs. It doesn't really talk about streaming. But I guess there is a music element to the category where Easy Group own the trademark Easy Life. So you might think, okay, that's quite a straightforward claim. But again, hang on, why has it taken 6 years for Easy Group to notice? Well, actually, Easy Group only registered its Easy Life trademark in 2020. And then because there's a process you have to go through in order for the trademark to be registered, actually, that trademark was only added to the UK trademark register in August last year. So it's only relatively recently that Easy Group has owned the trademark Easy Life. Hence why the dispute is only happening now rather than 5 years ago. But you might think, well, hang on a second, if Easy Group only registered the Easy Life trademark in 2020 and it wasn't even on the register until last year, how could Easy Group possibly be complaining about the band Easy Life, who have been operating for longer than they have owned the mark? Although, in the lawsuit that Easy Group filed as part of their dispute with the band, they also pointed out that last year, they also did a deal with a company that operates a mail order website called Easy Life. And the Easy Life website has been operating for 20 odd years. So it has been using the name and the brand and the mark Easy Life for quite a long time. Actually, until relatively recently, Easy Group didn't like the fact that this Easy Life company existed and there was a little bit of a dispute between Easy Group and Easy Life, the retail website. But those two companies clearly made up last year. And as part of that, Easy Group ended up getting the brands that the Easy Life mail order website owns, and then they licensed them back to the mail order site. So that dispute was over. And so I guess on the basis that although Easy Group has only owned the Easy Group trademark for, well, a year really, since it actually being on the register, because they bought the name assets and the brand assets of Easy Life, the mail order site, actually, weirdly, they've had the rights to that name for much longer, and therefore, that's our trademark case against Easy Life, the band. Although it has to be said, that's pretty complicated, isn't it? And I think we can all agree that it's sufficiently complicated that you've probably completely lost track of what I've been saying for the last 2 or 3 minutes, because that's a little bit of a complicated claim. But we should stress that that wasn't the only claim in the lawsuit, because Easy Group also reckon that Easy Life the band, even though they're called Easy Life, have been infringing the much better known EasyJet brand and trademark.
Yes, and that's in no small part because of a poster that the band used for their Life's a Beach tour in 2021 and 2022, which featured an image of an EasyJet plane with the EasyJet logo reworked to say Easy Life, obviously. So Easy Group's lawsuit says the aeroplane poster uses an image of an EasyJet plane with the words EasyJet replaced with the words Easy Life in the same font and style used by EasyJet and the other brands within the Easy family. Around about the same time, Easy Group adds, the band also sold t-shirts with Easy Life written in the style of the EasyJet logo, employing the airline's well-known distinctive orange colouring. But the question still remains, is any of that enough to constitute trademark infringement, especially when, I mean, it clearly seems like all of that was meant to be taken as a joke. And I think you know the answer. Easy Group reckons yes. Yes, it is. So the lawsuit continues. Owing to the strength of the reputation in the aforesaid marks, the band benefits from an association with that positive view and vast brand recognition, regardless of whether the link was intended to be provocative or humorous. And speaking of being provocative, the lawsuit goes on to list various things the band have done, which it argues damages the reputation of Easy Group because of the connection between the band's name and its brands. That includes selling merch containing the slogan, "Who gives a fuck?" Frontman Murray Matravers shouting, "Fuck the Tories, you're all crazy cunts, and you're all crazy motherfuckers," during a set at last year's Transmit Festival, and a show in Oxford in August this year, during which, and I quote from the lawsuit again, a member of the band encouraged the audience to stay behind and take ketamine with them. This episode's getting its explicit tag, I think. It's earned it.
Thank you, Easy Life, for that. And we should stress, for the avoidance of any doubt, thank you, Easy Life, the band, for all of that swearing. Nothing to do with Easy Life, the website, or the Easy Group. We don't want to get a mess in this.
Well, they put it in the lawsuit. Now, it's a joint effort.
That is true. If it wasn't for the Easy Group, we wouldn't have brought it
working
up.
Together as one.
Now, as you alluded to, the fact there was this poster using an EasyJet plane, the fact there was the t-shirt with the orange logo, and there were some other things the band did that were playing up, you know, the fact that EasyJet is a very notable brand in this country. All of that was pretty obviously taking the piss. It seems very unlikely that anybody really assumed that Easy Life, the band, had any association with EasyJet or the Easy Group. But would all of that, it was a joke, we were taking the piss, nobody was confused, would that be enough to go to court and fight off a trademark infringement action? Maybe it would, maybe it wouldn't. It's interesting with parody. Parody is something that comes up quite a lot in the context of copyright. Sometimes people infringe a copyright and the defense, when they get sued, is, yes, we did infringe copyright, but we did so as part of a parody. And because of freedom of expression, we should be allowed to do that without getting the copyright owner's permission. Because obviously, if we went to ask the copyright owner's permission, if our rework of their song, for example, is taking the piss, they're going to say no. So therefore, there's a parody exception in copyright. But when it comes to parody and trademark, it does come up. But under UK trademark law, it is a much less tested side. So I think had they fought this lawsuit in court, there were some risks for the band. And ultimately, that is why the band have decided, and they announced earlier this week, that they're not going to fight this lawsuit. They're not going to allow it to go to court. And in order to do that, they are accepting, reluctantly, that they're going to have to change their name.
Yeah, in an update posted to their website last week, the band said, "Having explored literally every possible avenue, we have realised that there are no good options available to us, and we need to change our name to move forward." Sadly, they went on, it seems that justice is only available to those who can afford it. We simply don't have the funds to access a fair trial in the High Court. Not to mention the fact that this would likely rattle on through to 2025, and with this hanging over us, we wouldn't be able to release any music in the meantime. Our careers, and indeed our lives, would be on hold. We're not a nameless company, as you've seen. It's our own personal names on the paperwork, they went on. This means that should we lose, the costs will be recouped from us personally. They could take everything, material possessions, our livelihoods, our homes.
So with all that in mind, last week the band played two final shows as Easy Life, one at Leicester's Academy venue, the other at Coco in London. And now they are presumably busy trying to come up with a new name because they've not actually announced any new name as yet. Difficult Death, maybe? I mean, we all love band names that alliterate, don't we?
Yeah. I can only think of Duran Duran and Everything Everything. But there's probably some bands but there's probably are some bands who don't just have two words next to each other, the same words twice, basically.
Repeating the same word twice doesn't really count as proper alliteration, does it?
Green. I'm just making up names now.
Well, if it turns out that we don't love band names that alliterate, we should, and there should be more of them, and I'm looking forward to the launch of Difficult Death. In addition to Easy Life having to come up with a new name, there's also the matter of this lawsuit that was filed against them, because although they have decided not to fight the lawsuit, and although they're going to change their name, they are still potentially liable for trademark infringement. So the band admitted that this saga is not yet over. They're now going to sit down with the lawyers from Easy Group and say, okay, we're going to change our name. Can we do some sort of deal? Will Easy Group do some sort of deal? Let's not forget. It was Easy Group that referred to the band as brand thieves in a weirdly bullish statement. There's a whole section on the Easy Group website where they talk about their various trademark battles over the years.
Yeah.
But there has been a lot of backlash to this online, not just from the band's fans, from lots of other artists. And also I've seen a number of politicians stepping in, basically saying, come on, nobody thought Easy Life the band was associated with you and your company. Okay, maybe that poster was unwise. Maybe they did play around a little bit too much with the similarities between Easy Life and Easy Jet, but it was clearly a joke and you shouldn't be an evil corporate pursuing a trademark vendetta. So do we think Easy Group will relent and let them off, providing they change their name?
Well, having looked through that section of their website this week, I'm going to say no, I think they're going to forge ahead and be really mean about it, because that seems to be what they do. And maybe rightly in some situations, but as you say, clearly no one thought that Easy Life were the official band of Easy Group. That band would not have had two top 10 albums. That band wouldn't have had one album. There was a girl group once who were the face of a betting company, I think, and that didn't last. But yeah, companies don't have official pop groups. Not yet, anyway. Maybe that's the next phase of brand partnerships in music, that bands are just officially associated with brands. But currently, it's not a thing, and Easy Life are not that thing. So just let them off. That's what I say. Let them keep their name.
Maybe the band could agree to give some exclusive content to Easy Music, which, as a result of covering this lawsuit, I now discover is a music news website. Who knew? Originally, Easy Music was the Easy Group's attempt at a download store back in the early 2000s when everyone was setting up download stores. Then I think it pivoted to become a CD mail order site once it was clear that downloads were going nowhere and it was all about physical discs. Apparently, it then spent a number of years as a karaoke service and very recently rebranded as a music news website. So given it's a music news website that no one has ever heard of, I suspect it's a music news website so that they can show they're still using the brand Easy Music. Maybe there's some deal that could be done there. We will see.
And finally on this edition of Setlist, Coldplay have countersued their former manager, Dave Holmes, not that one, accusing him of making some costly errors on their most recent tour, as well as exploiting his relationship with the band to secure loans from live giant Live Nation. According to The Times, Coldplay claim that their ex-manager owes them damages in excess of £14 million. However, a spokesperson for Holmes says that the band's lawsuit is relying on non-existent ethical lapses and other made-up misconduct to distract from the fact they reneged on their most recent deal with him.
Now, although we've not talked about the big bust-up between Coldplay and their ex-manager before here on Setlist, this is not a brand new story. We have reported on it before in the CMU Daily. And the reason why it's not a brand new story is Holmes sued first. Okay, so he filed a lawsuit against the band earlier this summer, their management partnership having ended last year. They worked together for a very long time, but it does look like the parting was somewhat acrimonious. In Holmes's lawsuit, he made a number of allegations. He basically said that his management deal with the band had always been structured around album cycles. So each time the band went into the studio to do a new album, they would renew the management agreement and he would get his commissions on all the various different revenue streams until the next album went into production. Although actually, more recently, the deals have been based around two album releases. So each time two albums have been released, the management deal gets renewed. The most recent of those deals expired with 2021's Music of the Spheres, and Holmes claims that basically, after that album had been released, a new deal was agreed. There were still some formalities to be ironed out, but basically the band said, yeah, we're going to keep you as our manager for another two albums that would take their partnership in to 2025. And on that basis, Holmes says, he started working on the next album and on a tour that will accompany the next album. That included negotiating a new record deal for Coldplay with Warner Music, on which there was a pretty sizable advance. As the manager, Holmes was able to commission on that advance. And therefore, although there were still a few bits of paperwork to be done around the new management deal, Holmes's argument would be, we basically agreed terms. I started working on those terms. I even started invoicing. Clearly, a new management deal had been agreed and was now in operation. However, his lawsuit went on. Once all that work was underway, and as far as he was concerned, a new management deal was in place and he was already working under that new deal, the band, through their lawyers, then said, actually, no new management deal has been agreed. We're still negotiating on that. After that, they then came back to him and said, actually, we don't want you to work on the same terms as you have previously. We don't want you to be full management for the band. We just want you to oversee the touring activity, just run the live side of the business, which of course would mean that although he wouldn't have as much work to do, Holmes would only be commissioning on the live side of Coldplay's activity, not everything else. And then when negotiations seemingly were ongoing, this is all according to Holmes's lawsuit, in terms of that new role, then the band sacked him and basically said, actually, it's not that we want you to do a more defined role. We just don't want to work with you anymore. Hence the lawsuit.
Yes, in his lawsuit, Holmes wants that management deal and the commissions he would be due under it to be enforced, or at least for the band to be obliged to pay him for the work that he'd already done on the next album and tour before he was sacked. So in their countersuit, Coldplay deny Holmes's claim in its entirety, insisting that they never extended their manager's contract because of growing concerns about his conduct. As for what those concerns were, they claim that Holmes made a number of errors in the management of their last tour, including allowing costs to surge, buying some equipment that was not suitable, and commissioning a visual project known as Jet Screen for $9.7 million, but then providing incorrect specs so that the screen could only be used at 10 shows. Those mistakes ended up costing the band millions, the new lawsuit alleges. Hence, they think that they are due damages from their former manager rather than the other way around.
It is somewhat confusing well, actually, there's quite a lot that's confusing about this dispute because the two sides are presenting such a different picture. But if most of the concerns within Coldplay about Dave Holmes' management related to mistakes made on their tour, why would they want to change his role as manager to only be focusing on touring activity? Surely it should be the other way around. Or maybe they were thinking he still needs some practice on touring and that's why we'll make him just focus on that. Who knows? It's confusing because both sides are saying very different things. There is another big allegation in Coldplay's lawsuit. They allege that, unbeknownst to them, back in 2015 and again in 2018, Holmes negotiated a loan from the live music giant Live Nation. And with the two loans, it totaled $30 million. And the lawsuit says that that money seemed to relate to some sort of property development venture in Canada that Holmes was involved in. They allege that Holmes was only able to access that kind of money from Live Nation because of his relationship with Coldplay and Live Nation's relationship with Coldplay. And they also say that once he had that loan agreement with Live Nation and was in the process of still servicing that debt and paying it back, that potentially or maybe actually conflicted him when he was subsequently negotiating deals on behalf of Coldplay with Live Nation, because the allegation goes he wasn't fully empowered to negotiate the deal for the band because he owed Live Nation a load of money.
Responding to the band's new lawsuit, a spokesperson for Holmes said, "Coldplay know they are in trouble with their defence. Accusing Dave Holmes of non-existent ethical lapses and other made-up misconduct will not deflect from the real issue at hand. Coldplay had a contract with Dave. They are refusing to honour it and they need to pay Dave what they owe him."
So tough talking from both sides in this dispute. This is actually not that we like there to be disarray in the music industry. We would love it if everyone gets along. But I mean, from a CMU journalist perspective, this is quite an exciting dispute. If this gets to court, I think I might go and watch it because they are both talking tough. They're both making bold allegations. Clearly an acrimonious end to this incredibly long-term relationship. Also, I think because Coldplay and Chris Martin in particular sort of has always had that reputation of being, you know, a good, solid, moral person. So if allegations were to come up about the band treating their manager unfairly, that would be interesting too. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see how this progresses. Although, and we always have to say this on Setlist, don't we? This would be fascinating if it got to court. It probably won't.
It won't. It absolutely won't. But it'd be great if it did. But they never do. Nah. It's a real shame. Oh, well. But it'd be great. Yeah, it would be great if it did because it would be fun and potentially funny. So those are our two favourite things with court cases.
So we will see how this now progresses.
But that's all we've got time for on this edition of Setlist. If you want to read more about anything we've discussed here, go and find the show notes at completemusicupdate.com. If you haven't yet subscribed to the show, you really should do that. Hit the subscribe button wherever you can see it, even if that's several different places. Just subscribe, subscribe, subscribe. Listen to it multiple times on different platforms. Listen to it multiple times on the same platforms. Just listen to it over and over again. And then rate it, because if you're listening to it that many times, you must really like it. So rate it everywhere you can. Review it too. That's nice. And if you want to tell us anything, you can email us setlist@completemusicupdate.com. Setlist is the music business podcast from CMU. It's presented by Andy Malt and Chris Cook. And for more on CMU, go to completemusicupdate.com.
Easy Group only registered its Easy Live trademark in 2020. And because it then takes a while to go through the pro... That's ironic. That's an EasyJet app alert interrupting.